Blog Talk Radio. As of the 1st of October 2019, in South Australia, a new law was passed that allows a public servant to enter, remain, inspect, or use reasonable force to break into any premise, place, vehicle or vessel. This public servant can remove items from the premises to be used as evidence in future, and a warrant is not required if there is a suspicion, just a suspicion, that a vulnerable adult is at risk of abuse. Matters will then be directed to a court or tribunal that is not bound by the rules of evidence, can determine matters as it thinks fit, and can reach an outcome, just, on the balance of probabilities. Not beyond reasonable doubt. Victims often end up a ward of state. The public guardian and public trustee are often placed as the ultimate decision maker and take over all affairs. These laws are expected to be rolled out in other states next year. Are you scared yet?
Go.
Good evening. I'm Marcia Joyner, your host this evening with Betrayed by Hospice. For any new people that are listening today, the reason for this show is to warn unsuspecting people that, sadly, the hospice no longer the organization that comes in to give the patient and family compassionate care. Most hospices prey on the most vulnerable people, the elderly. If you or your loved one are in a hospital several times during the year, you may experience someone from hospice showing up in your room and trying to tell you that they can help you so that you don't have to keep coming back to the hospital. They appear to be so concerned and offer to come to your house, check on you, prepare meals, and if you have a caregiver, to make their life easier. It sounds really good to have supportive people who care and would come and help you and not cost you anything. Beware. How did these people know so much about you and know you'd been in the hospital for a broken bone, pneumonia, or any other illness? They talk so sweetly and convince you that hospice doesn't mean you're dying soon. They're there to help you. And if you ask point blank, will they hasten your death, you are told, absolutely not. We don't do that. It's a lie. They would, and they do. And who is paying for this wonderful service? It isn't free. Medicare and Medicaid pay, and make no mistake, the name of the game is to save money. But all the while padding people's pockets with blood money. Even nonprofit hospices profit from people dying under their fake compassionate care. Now, not all hospices are bad, but sadly, we don't know of many of them that are pro-life, but we do know of a lot of them that are bad, and let me just say, downright evil. Providing medical care to the elderly is costly, and it's determined that these people are not considered viable to society. But to the family, most of their family, their value is we love them and we want them to live until it's their time to die and not be drugged, starved, and dehydrated to a painful death. But again, it is cheaper to put them in a coma and euthanize them. I know this sounds horrible, but that is what is occurring, and people need to be aware of this. This year, the amount of money that is paid per hospice patient is $29,205.44. That is approximately equivalent to 6 months of care. Some people live longer than 6 months, and some don't. But it is the amount, the number of patients times that amount. If they're there for 1 day, they get paid for 1 day. If it's 5 days, 5 days. But other people wind up staying 6, 8 months, 10 months, as you'll see later in our story. And that's okay because it is calculated between the number of people. They're enrolling people into hospices that are not at death's door, and they shouldn't meet any criteria. But once they're enrolled, many a times, all of a sudden, they take a turn for the worse. Myself, as well as other guests, have personally seen them start drugging our loved ones into a coma with morphine, Ativan, Haldol, fentanyl, or Seroquel. There are times that these drugs are needed and that they are helpful depending on the circumstances. But this is not a case of one set of drugs fits all, and yet that is what is happening. Often we hear about a ham sandwich, which people will quiet the patient, which is Haldol, Ativan, and morphine. People are told that morphine will help make it easier for you to breathe, but they don't tell you that morphine will also depress your breathing and ultimately cause the patient to stop breathing, especially with the combination and the duration. These drugs render the patient unable to swallow regular medications, food, or even drink water, which causes starvation and dehydration, a horrible, painful death. It's called stealth euthanasia, as cited at Hospice Patients Alliance website. When you are shocked at this decline, the families there, and sees your loved one declining this quickly, the nurse convincingly tells you it's the dying process, and they may give you a pamphlet to read which shows the signs of dying, which are also the signs of an overdose. But the family nods their head and believes because we're not educated on such things. And after all, isn't hospice compassionate? No. A strong, young, and healthy person would die from these drugs, the combination, the amount, and the frequency, with no food or hydration. So how is it that our loved one just died because they happened to know it was their time? They didn't. It is a lie and a total betrayal of the individual and the health care that they are supposed to be providing. Remember do no harm oath they supposedly signed? It isn't worth the paper it's written on for most of them. This show is to warn you of what is happening across the country so you don't go through what many of us have. You just heard a snippet earlier, and this is in Australia, and it's happening there. It's happening in all the country and all of the states in the United States. My mom's death was hastened by a hospice in Georgia in 2017, and I will never accept that it was okay and just move on. Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen states, "The refusal to take sides on great moral issues is in itself a decision. It is a silent acquiescence to evil. The tragedy of our time is that those who still believe in honesty lack fire and conviction, while those who believe in dishonesty are full of passionate conviction. Which will you choose to be?" Tonight, I am pleased to introduce Terry LaPointe, who was the lead investigative journalist for MedicalKidnap.com, a division of Health Impact News, for more than 4 years, where she investigated and published articles on hundreds of cases involving family members, mostly children taken from their families by child or adults with the Adult Protection Service. She continues to work as an independent investigative journalist at realnewsspark.com. She is a contributing author to 2 books and a regular guest on blog talk and radio programs as this one. She received the Michelle Malkins Bulldog Award for her investigative work on medical kidnapping in 2017. I like that term, bulldog, because she doesn't let it go. From what I understand, everything I've read about her and heard is she does an awesome job investigating and she follows things through. In fact, she's not even in her home state now. She's actually on a trip, and she graciously agreed to talk to us, even though she's working another case. In April of 2019, I met Nancy Scott through Facebook group Murdered by Hospice. and I heard about her precious mom, Marion Leonard, who was medically kidnapped and being held against her will in Alabama. She had been refused to let her see her mom. I was able to recommend to her to contact Life Legal Defense Foundation, which she did, to get legal guidance. During this time, she found Terry, the lady who's fixing to come on and talk to us, and joined her in her efforts to save her mom. And Terry has written several articles about her mom, which we'll talk about later. My point in saying this to you is just the mere fact that when I was talking to Nancy back last spring when her mom was in dire need of being rescued, I was able to give her information about Life Legal Defense Foundation. It's important that we tell people what's going on and that we talk about it and we warn people, because you never know what you might say to somebody else that triggers them and they contact somebody and they get help. They were able to help Nancy to a certain degree, and Terry was able to help her a lot and gave her a lot of support. So Terry travels a bit investigating, researching, and speaking out about these atrocities. Terry, I'd like to thank you for coming on tonight. I know you're busy, but I appreciate you coming on to talk to us and share some of your experiences with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I appreciate your kind words. I wish that we'd never had to talk about any of this, because what is happening is absolutely atrocious, and it's heartbreaking and it's cruel. But it's a reality, and we've got to keep talking about it. We've got to keep on talking about it until it stops.
That's right. So how does this happen in our society, that somebody who's not a member of the family can come in and take custody of somebody?
Strange little legal loopholes and corruption, and it's mind-boggling how somebody can just say that they can make an allegation and take you to court. With the senior citizens, it seems to be probate court. With children, it's family court or dependency court, calling Child Protective Services or Adult Protective Services. People can make false allegations. They can just decide that they want to say something and make it up and then report it. And then it's investigated I use that term loosely. When I investigate, mm-hmm. I'm looking for facts and evidence. But when these protective services groups investigate, they're looking for hearsay and innuendo. So it's a far cry from an actual investigation. But there's these legal loopholes that allow strangers to petition for somebody and make these allegations that they're not being cared for, or they need guardianship, they need oversight or whatever from the state. And then judges are signing off on it and allowing strangers to come in and take over someone's life. Take over the ability to make their medical decisions, take over the ability to make financial decisions, their decisions about where they live and what medicines they take, what heirlooms go to whom, and all of the above. It's amazing the power that they have, that is virtually unchecked power. And family members are left stunned, because they're like, how did this happen? And some people can spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars fighting back, and sometimes they're just throwing this money away because it's to no avail.
So do you think when they're doing this that there are certain, I know it's evil and it's corrupt, but are there certain judges that are going to authorize this, and they know that they've worked in and they've got their little fine process down. They know which attorneys to go to, which judges to hear the case. So, I mean, is it like a racketeering type business that they're doing?
That would seem to be the case, because when we started investigating and looking into it, I remember doing a series in Boston, and there were four different senior citizens, three of whom were ultimately euthanized. I'm not sure about the fourth one, whatever happened. but all in the same area and all involving different names. I did like a spreadsheet to see how many of the names, and almost every name that was involved with one case was involved with another case, if not two or three or four of them. So there were commonalities, names that were common. On the one you're talking about, that we're talking about with Ms. Marion Leonard from Birmingham, I got an email just today that said, and they described almost the same scenario. They said their mother had been taken, and Judge Alan King was the one who signed off on it, and that she was put into the hospice. And, I mean, it sounded just exactly the same. The Adult Protective Services, DHR, which is the Department of Human Resources in Alabama. Every state has their own little name, their own little alphabet soup, but it's the same kinds of agencies. And so the same judge involved in this case. So I think that I think you are correct. I think that if we could investigate them all out, I think we would find that there are certain pockets. I know that there was some in Las Vegas where they broke up the racket, or they exposed it anyway, in the movie The Guardian.
That was, yeah, with April Parks.
Mm-hmm. And then the
right.
one that the Rachel, her name Rachel, I can't remember her last name at the moment, the Michigan, where she investigated a bunch of those these stories happening in Michigan with common players. So I think that you are correct, because like you said, they're not all hospice workers are bad, and not all social workers are bad, not all judges or attorneys are bad, but the ones that are can make life a living nightmare for families.
Right.
The pockets of corruption. But our legal system, the way the laws are written, allow these loopholes that allow for this opportunity for corruption, opportunity for mischief to happen.
The investigative reporter that you're talking about in Michigan was Gretchen Hammond.
Gretchen. Yes.
Gretchen.
That's who I
meant. Yeah, well, it was
Gretchen
Rachel,
not Rachel
Hammond. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No,
Rachel
it is Gretchen Rachel.
Okay.
Yeah, Hammond, and she did an outstanding job, and like yourself,
yes, she did.
But she just, I mean, she got beat down so hard, and she as you're speaking about, it's devastating to watch the cruelty that is being done to these individuals. I mean, she told stories that would just, you know, break your heart, as you have.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to point out to our listeners, at 9 o'clock, we will take phone calls. If somebody has any questions or a comment, we'll take your call at that time. But so when they come in, let me ask you, do you have to say that I see that my neighbor lives down the street and it's, you know, it's an elderly woman and she lives by herself, and I just decide, okay, there's a quick buck in there. I can just go in there and take over and put her into some kind of facility, make money off of her, charge an ungodly hourly amount. Do you have to have some type of license to do this, or can anybody on the street decide that they see something, an elderly person lives alone, and they're going to come in there and they're going to take over and become their power of attorney? Is that how that works,
question.
Or do you have to have
a
license?
I think that it varies from place to place, because there are some places where they have to have some qualifications to be the guardian, and then there's other places where it seems that there really are none. So I think it's varied from at least from state to state, and possibly from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you just go in, just make that decision, and go to an attorney that you know is going to support you, and to that judge that, like, in the case with April Parks in Las Vegas, Nevada, the judge that they used and the attorneys were complicit in this. She
mm-hmm.
did get caught by the FBI racketeering, and, you know, she's spending time in jail, as she, well, she should.
Mm-hmm.
But there were specific ones, and she had, I don't know, like 120 different people under her. But what she would do is she would go into their homes, and I would imagine it's like this, that they start selling off the thing, like you were talking about the heirlooms, they decide who gets what, but they actually can take those items and the family is not involved and they steal those items and they can put your house on the market saying that it costs them this much money to put you into this, you know, facility where you're being taken care of and probably not very good care, but they sell your home so they can take that money, and they're charging an administrative fee for everything they're doing for you. If they contact the doctor, if they give you medicine, and there is an additional charge to that. So it's a big business, right?
It is. It is. There were some figures that we found where that it's like a $50 billion in assets are seized by adult protective services and adult cases like this. There are three times as many adults in guardianship care than there are children in foster care. Three times as many. Yeah, and that was shocking to me. But and we've got to remember, too, when you're talking about the guardianship care, sometimes it is the senior citizen. Sometimes it is a disabled young person. It can be a person that is has some kind of disability, mental disability, some kind of illness or whatever. And we've covered some of those. Kids that were living at home, 21-year-old kids that somebody, the hospital decided they didn't like the decisions that the mom was making, and so they took over care, and they would lock these young people away in homes or facilities. So it isn't just our senior citizens. I mean, it's alarming that it's our senior citizens, but it can be anybody with any kind of disability.
Well, it's alarming that it is at all. I mean,
right,
it's alarming that anybody at any and. Even if it's a family member, right, if a family member does that to somebody, one of their loved ones, they obviously don't love them a lot if they're going to do that because they're taking advantage of them. And what people don't understand, someone was telling me a situation where the guy answered all the questions correctly and they're trying to determine if they're competent. He answered all the questions, but he took too long to answer one question. The doctor didn't like it and ruled he was incompetent, even though he answered it correctly. He took too long to answer the question.
Well, that would be a phlegmatic person, a person with a stoic, a personality that just thinks before they answer. I mean, good grief.
Right.
I can think of a number of very competent family members that would fit that are nowhere near senior citizens that would apply to.
Right, or if you say a joke, if somebody asks you something and you jokingly reply to that, there's a danger sign there because
they're looking, as you said
earlier, the investigative part for them, they're looking for anything that they can slide in there and take control of your life. And if you have money, so you have a home, you have finances in the bank, I don't know how they know that, but they do, then they can come in and take you. But if you don't have money and they believe you're costing money, it's the same thing. They're still going to come in, and then they'll charge the state money to take care
Medicaid.
Of you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so if it's a poor person, they can drug them and keep on drugging them and trump up fake Medicaid charges and do it until all the Medicaid benefits run out. If it is a well-off person, they can milk their estate. And I think of Lisa Belanger out of Boston, whose father was an attorney, and he had the financial people come in to help him make his decisions and help him to get his paperwork in order and go through the finances and make sure that he had everything in place, the power of attorney and all of that, all the things that they tell you to do. Well, so some of these people that he had involved in that saw how much money he had. He had his estate was worth somewhere around $9 million. He was well off, and his daughter was staying at his house. His daughter and her husband and her two kids were staying with their father to help him, and they seized custody of this man and kicked the daughter and her family out of the house. And they said things about Lisa, things like, She would go off with her father, and nobody would know where they were. Like, you know, that's called life. I mean, I don't know about you, but do you not go with somebody that's in your house and y'all go to the store, you go out to eat, go to a movie, you go do something, and maybe everybody in the house doesn't exactly know where you are because you're just out and about because this is life. We do this. And
exactly.
That was used against her.
Right.
Against her.
Well, and she, Lisa was on Marty's show for the last two nights.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's
okay.
listening and wants to hear the entire sequence and the story on that, it's archived, and Marty Oakley just had her on her show, and she can, you know, fill you in on more information on that. But you're absolutely right. They will come in, and if you do have money, they're going to take it, and if you don't have money, they're going to take that too. And one of the things that I've become very, very wary since my mom was murdered, I don't trust medical people and doctors and finances and whatnot, and I get documentation all the time that comes to the house that says, hey, you can have a free meal. Come down here, you have a free meal, and we'll discuss retirement with you. And they want to discuss your finances. And I went to one many, many years ago. But when they have you fill out the paperwork and they want to know how much money do you have and how much longer do you have before you retire and, you know, what are your hobbies, they get an awful lot of information from you in
wow.
those retirements.
That's very alarming. Lots of red flags.
It is.
Lots of
well,
red flags.
It is, but if you don't know that this is going on, you would not, you know, a lot of people are,
oh, right.
shall I say, braggadocious, you know, and if you've paid your house off or, you know, if you've got how much ever money in the bank, you're very proud of it, and so you'll talk about it. That is a big
mm-hmm.
mistake to let anybody know what your financial situation is because you make yourself a target. And
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying
yeah.
that at all these retirement, you know, please don't say that I said all retirement facilities are bad. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you need to be cautious when you tell people how much money you have, just as in the case with Lisa, she found out that it cost her dad, you know, his estate,
mm-hmm.
and they come in there and rape
mm-hmm.
it. And unfortunately, as you said earlier, you spend thousands going to court trying to fight that, and you still lose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
yes, absolutely.
We have to be very guarded, very guarded, very, very cautious. So,
yeah. One of the things I want to bring out real too is it doesn't just happen with a parent and child and that kind of thing. We had one of the most alarming cases that we covered was the case of a gentleman named Charlie Taylor and his wife, Helen Taylor. And his legs weren't working anymore. He was in a wheelchair and she's a tiny little woman. And so they ended up putting him in a nursing home and keeping his wife, not his wife of two or three years, you know, somebody, a gold digger from, you know, late in life. No, his wife of many, many years. They were in love. They had kids together. They had a life together. And they put him in this nursing home, and they kicked her out and took over guardianship and wouldn't let her see her own husband, wouldn't let
wow.
The man in the nursing home see his own wife. And I'm thinking,
they isolate
wow.
him.
They did. Now, this one went out. We covered, we did quite a number of articles on this at medicalkidnap.com. And I saw her in October at the Family Restoration Conference we did in Birmingham. And she came down and she's had her husband is back home where he belongs. They
wonderful.
Have a relationship. Yes, isn't that wonderful? And he was
oh,
just
yes.
like, they had a friend over watching him so she could come down for the day for this conference. But they are together, and he is thriving. He's doing so well. They were starving him. They literally were starving him at this place. They were not feeding him, and that's something. Boy, howdy, that's what we see a lot. They starve these people.
Well, and dehydrate once they start giving him the drugs.
Right.
Right. So how did she get him back?
I don't know how actually that ended up happening.
Okay.
Just all of a sudden it was like there was so much attention drawn to their story, and this was being sent to people in her state, the legislators and all kinds of stuff, And apparently some people figured out that there was, and she had uncovered a nest of people that were involved in several similar cases and started naming names, and we were naming names and all of that. I don't remember all of that that we found at the time, but some people were kind of being exposed, and all of a sudden he's just back home, and they allowed him to come back home, and that was that. So
wow,
I guess somebody's
awesome.
Tired of being exposed. Yeah,
right.
That is
right.
Not the typical ending of these stories, unfortunately.
No, it is not. The typical ending is they die, and
right,
one of the
right.
things that we've found out in talking to several of our guests in the previous is that now food and water are considered medical treatment. It's not necessary for life. It's considered
water. That's craziness. That is crazy.
That is. And so they
and
can deny that.
And you got to watch it when you're doing that you sign when you go to the hospital. I'm sorry, I'm not feeling so good, so I'm drawing blanks more than usual.
Well, the pulse, P-O-L-S-T or DNR, is that what you're talking about?
No, it's like when you go to the hospital, like a living will, like they ask you if you're having surgery. I mean, even at my age, they ask, oh,
right,
do you have
right.
a living will or do you have something? And so, and I was looking through, filling out these documents, and it's like, are you okay with them withholding life extending treatment? And that means, like, to me, that means artificial stuff. You're on some artificial machines that are artificially keeping you alive when you really ought to be gone. But, no, they include food and water in that.
That's
and
right.
I was like,
that's right.
Excuse me, that is no. That is not the same. That is not
no,
the same
and,
at all.
And you don't sign that. And the other thing is Marty had brought out earlier is if you sign that, if you look down the fine print, you are giving them the authority that if they go through and they find out you haven't had vaccines, that
right.
while you're under, they can give you all of these vaccines while you're there for. You know, I don't know, endoscopy or something.
Eye surgery.
They can go ahead and give you vaccines. And
right,
it's interesting
right.
you say that. I just took my dad to, it's not a new doctor, but they just merged with another office. And that was one of the things the lady asked me before we went in to see the doctor. She said, does he have a living will? And I just looked at her and I said, no, and he's not going to have one. Has he had all of his vaccines? And I said, no, and he's not going to have any. And she just sort of looked at me, and I said, I'm sorry. Let me explain to you why I am on such high alert with you asking me these questions. And, you know, then I told her about my mom being murdered and about what I know now about the medical profession and, you know, DNRs and whatnot. She was shocked, and she said, I think they killed my dad, and I want to know more. Can you give me more information? So
wow.
I gave her a card, which, you know, has a bunch of information on it, and she was just kind of shocked. You could tell that she kind of shook her head, and she goes, I'm sorry. She goes, that has just thrown me off. So we don't need to answer these questions. Let's just move on. We don't need to. No, we're not going to do this. And then she took us back to see the doctor. But you're absolutely right. You have to be careful on that. And the term on that is biologics. Biologics, and if you look down, you see it in fine print, then they can give you, they can do anything they want to do. They can run tests on you, and they can give you all the vaccines they want, and you can take the form. What you should do is if they want you to sign that, tell them you want a hard copy. You're not just going to initial a piece of paper that says, I saw it. You want to physically see it and have them print you off. They all have printers. Mark that off. And
right.
the term biologics, mark it out and initial it there and sign
initial
it. Make sure. And then all you've got
mm-hmm.
to do is take your phone, make a copy of it with your phone. You know, it's all of our phones now. Most of them have cameras, and keep a copy
mm-hmm.
for yourself. So
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, we have to be so diligent in this because if we're not, anything can happen to us or our loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
right.
And that's Nancy Scott. Talked about Miss Leonard, but she found that out. Now, I had started talking to her this past spring when her mom was in there, and her mom was 101 when she mm-hmm. was in a nursing home in Tennessee for physical therapy, following
right.
she'd fallen and broken her hip. So Nancy wanted to bring her home to Alabama. So do you want to kind of go on and talk about what happened when she tried to bring her back to Alabama, closer to her, to have her in a, mm-hmm. a facility so she could go see her?
Okay. So she wanted her mother to be checked out to see if she could make the trip. You know, how was she healthy enough to make that trip? Because where they're from is South Alabama. It's a good little trek from where they were in Tennessee. So she wanted to make sure that she was healthy enough. So she was transported to a nearby hospital and checked out, and the doctor said she was fine. She was okay to go wherever she wanted. He figured if she's 101 years old, she can kind of go wherever she wants to. And it appeared to the doctor that she was being that her daughter was caring for her appropriately and all of that. Now, what we found out later was there was someone who had written in the report that Ms. Leonard had end-stage Alzheimer's dementia. And this person, and now this was not diagnosed by a doctor. There was no medical doctor, but somebody at the nursing home had written that, had gotten into the papers, and that got same thing, that same comment got into the report from the ambulance company, and someone signed at the hospital. Same person, same signature at all three of these places. So did she work for the hospital or for the ambulance company or for the nursing home? Same woman signed for it. And at all. Did she work for any of that? Now, Nancy said that she had seen this woman at the nursing home before. She assumed she worked for the nursing home. But this woman just wrote this in the report. She looked her up and found, lo and behold, there's her mugshot when she Googled her. And she was, she had been charged and was since that time convicted of fraud with Tennessee Medicaid, I think it was called. And so we don't know really who this woman is or what her role is, but we do know that she put into the records that this lady had end-stage Alzheimer's, but she was never diagnosed by a medical doctor with any kind of dementia. In fact, we have documentation from Emory University from 2016 that says that there was no sign of dementia or Alzheimer's, no sign. And this is, let's see, she would have been, 98 years old in 2016? So, she was 103, so 3 years ago.
In 16, she would
have been 100 years old.
She would have been 100, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so at 100
and no
years
dementia.
Old, there's no sign of any of that. So she's done remarkably well, no sign of any of that. And so this woman that's a fraudulent person writes this in the record. Meanwhile, okay, so she's approved to go from Tennessee to Alabama. And so Nancy's driving her to Birmingham, and she had arranged, had a hotel halfway to in Birmingham. I'm sorry, Birmingham is like the halfway point. And so they got to a hotel, but her mother was running a little bit of a temperature, so she decided to take her to a hospital called St. Vincent's Hospital in downtown Birmingham just to have her evaluated. And she was showing symptoms that her daughter recognized as symptoms of a urinary tract infection. Well, that's actually what she had. Now, here's something that people need to understand about a urinary tract infection that is well known and well documented in the medical literature, and medical people do know this. They may not, some of them may not admit it, but some of them do. Some of them know this, that a urinary tract infection in a senior citizen will present as having symptoms of dementia. It can, one of the symptoms is confusion. It causes mental confusion in senior citizens. It doesn't, in younger people it doesn't, but that is a symptom, a very common, well-known symptom in a senior citizen. So she goes to this hospital, and she's confused and got some confusion symptoms that mimic dementia, but it's not dementia because it's a urinary tract infection. And so the records get sent from Tennessee, and so you've got this fraudulent stuff in these records sent, and so the hospital at St. Vincent's calls DHR, the Adult Protective Services, and some of the hospital petitions to, instead of allowing the mother to go the other few hours to South Alabama and have to the place that her daughter had for them. That was a really beautiful lakeside community, and was going to just be a really nice place for her to spend her you know, however long her last days would be. And because she's old, she wasn't sick other than the urinary tract infection, and she didn't have dementia up until her 90s, well into her late 90s, mind you. Mm-hmm. She was making her own decisions. Her daughter, who she had named as power of attorney, would just do what her mom said. Her mom would say, you know, I want to go over here to Georgia for something. Okay. Well, you know what? I don't like this place over here. Let's go travel over here. You know, they like to travel. You know, we all dream of traveling when we get older. So that's what they did, and that was used against them. That was one of the things that her mother, the daughter doesn't have her in a stable environment. Well, they didn't want it to be a stable environment. She wanted to travel. She liked to travel.
Right.
She liked to see the world. They were both English teachers. They liked literature and reading about different places, and so they wanted to go different places, which I don't think would be a crime, and I don't think that's grounds to take anyone. So
no,
back to
absolutely not.
Back to St. Vincent's Hospital.
And you're right that it does, UTI does show symptoms of dementia and confusion. I've seen that personally
right.
with my own mom. For the callers, I understand we have a couple of callers on the line. Do you want to take a call now? It's a little bit before.
Okay. We can, or I can just wrap up. We can come back to the rest of that story. We can come back to that in a little bit. Okay.
Okay, so Marty, you want to give us one of our callers?
Yes, area code 612, you're live and on the air.
Hi, Marty, this is Tammy Hook. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the bottom line is, this is organized crime. It is a form of gang stalking also. It's a form of legal abduction. Anybody can get into this. You don't have to be really well connected. Any nurse, social worker, adult protection worker, they could be friends. They can connect. They decide that they want to start their own residential assisted living home, residential. They go out and buy a house. The real estate market's dealing this too. They go get a house for each person that they can basically abduct. They will collect $3,000 up to even $10,000, but the average is $3,000. But they also collect that person, let's say they get survivor's benefits or Social Security or whatever. They take that from them. They take whatever they own. They collect for each person, and not only per room, now they're doubling up the room, so that person don't even have a private room. And I've even heard of residential housing that has 3 beds per room. So if you can multiply that anywhere from 3 to 6,000 average per person, and then if you double, triple up those rooms, you know, that's a lot of money. And that these people are going out and buying these big homes, and this is feeling, you know, it's really like a corrupted real estate organized crime thing too going on. My son, there's nowhere to turn. My son, for example, he gets in the morning, a clean depends on, you know, and then he sits all day being ignored. And does, even though my son never had a spinal cord injury, so he knows when he has to go to the bathroom, they make him piss and shit his pants all day until 7, 8 at night. He does not get changed. If you can imagine
this.
So
he's been guardianized? He's been guardianized now?
Yes, and my son talks just fine. He feeds himself. I mean, he has the use of only one hand. But they have deprived him of all his rights, making phone calls. He has no privacy. If he tells of any abuse, even begin, they control what he's allowed to say even. He's only allowed to tell him. I barely ever get to hear from him now. Barely. The phone calls are usually only 2 minutes because they do not want him to tell me anything that's going on.
To tell you anything. Terry, let me ask you, in your position as investigative reporting, is this something that Tammy could get in touch with you by your email or something and discuss this with you, or are you limited to certain states doing investigative reporting?
I'm in Minnesota.
Okay. There are actually right now, like Marty Oakley, and you guys, to me, I think, are doing a fabulous job on this. I've actually been coming to D.C. a lot, lobbying, not lobbying, that's the wrong word, petitioning our lawmakers to make some changes about the way Child Protective Services and all of that is happening. So I have not been covering nearly the stories I would like to. And I'm about to pull back from all of the stories and focus on writing a book and putting it together as quickly as I can. So,
yes, you got to hear the story that what happened to my son, because people were paid to abduct my son. I overheard it. And the nurse at Bethesda tried to warn me the first day that my son was here. And she said we were going to be back. And then when he was changed, transferred to each place, he was under attack, and I was under attack. This nurse tried to warn me twice, even the security. And then I overheard the conversation at Linden. I was coming down the hall from my son's bedroom, and right around the corner is the nurse's station. And I got a quick glance before I got around the corner of a nurse that I believe was from Bethesda, a person from there. And I overheard the bribery, the whole conversation of the bribery. I've never told anybody this. I've been afraid to tell anybody. But I heard the money that was involved, and I'm telling this for the first time, really, on air.
When did this happen? When was your son taken?
9 years ago. But I heard the thousands, but they said they'd each get 2,000, and then I heard them say, this was at the end of December, right? I heard them say, I don't know who he is, though. They said, he said that if you can have her out by the first week of January, by January 7th, then you will get an extra $500 bonus each. If you can, but she has to be completely out of the picture. They said she's asking the in fear that she's starting to catch on. She's smarter than we gave her credit for. She's asking too many questions. And on January 6th, I was visiting my son, and a nurse walked in and said, this is your last visit, were her exact words. This is your last visit. And I said, I looked at her in shock, and I said, what? She goes, you heard what I said. This is your last visit. And I said, why? And she goes, I don't have to give you a reason why. And my son, I'll never forget it, my son had tears in his eyes going, and he looked down, and then he looked up at me, and he went, because he was like, he couldn't believe it. He said, Mom, don't they understand that love is first? And I knew what he meant when he said love is first, that love was the biggest part of his healing. My son was doing grandpa's and everything. He became a zombie one day. I mean, literally. He went from singing to doing scramble puzzles because I was worried where was his brain going to be left at. You know what I mean? And he was doing really well. And all of a sudden, without consent, without notice, a psychiatrist, which I've never seen the psychiatrist even come down there, so he could even just made this up. But next thing I find out, and they didn't tell me this. I had to find out on my own. I had to demand his medical records. This is why they wanted me out of the picture. They gave him several, not one, but several, extreme high doses of antipsychotic medications. My son has brain injury acquired dementia. He may have been only a 30-year-old, but he had brain injury acquired dementia, which is almost like, you know, the kind of dementia that elderly get, but different, you know what I mean? Because he had brain surgery. His brain was intact. He was talking, communicating well. He was singing. He was doing mathematical. He was doing scramble puzzles and stuff like that. Me and my mom
clearly he was not ready for them to do that to them. Do you have my email address where you can send me an email and we can talk offline about this?
No, if you can give it to me, that would be great.
Okay, it's Marsha, Marsha Joiner, Joiner, 2018@gmail.com. So if you'll send me an email. We can talk about this offline.
Yeah, and I do want to say they do target disabled, especially like, let's say you would have been in an accident.
Right, and I am so sorry about your son. That's tragic.
I'm so sorry. Horrible.
Yeah,
how old
very
is your
tragic.
Son now?
He just turned 39. I'm not allowed to even give him a hug when I see him or a kiss. On his birthday, I asked for their permission, and the visit, they only let me see my son on his birthday for 2 minutes, long enough to collect all his gifts and leave, because I asked if I could give him a kiss. Yeah, and the reason why they don't let touch him is because the last time they physically abused my son, he had bruises on him, and he told me about it, and so I lifted up his shirt and saw the bruises.
Unfortunately, this does. It does happen, and it's so tragic.
Yeah.
So, send me an email, and we can talk offline about that. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's just tragic. That's so horrible.
Heartbreaking.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You have one other caller right now. And I'm going to remind our callers that, this is to comment with Terry or Marcia about our topic tonight. So if we could do that, I'd appreciate it. Area code 817, you're live and on the air.
Hello, Marcia.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Marcia.
Hi.
Love y'all.
Thank you. Just trying to get the word out.
I hear you. Marcia and Marty, this is Mr. McKnight calling.
Oh, okay. Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Can we talk? Marcia and Marty, can we do an article on court-ordered hail out of Texas?
Yes. Be glad to. Sure can.
My mother was taken out of her own home. She never had any felony. I took perfect care of her. Next thing you know, she's in White Settlement Nursing Home. I didn't find Marty. Marcia. She only lived 11 months in guardianship, and when she walked out of this house, she was perfectly healthy. Next thing you know, when I find her, it takes a Fort Worth lawyer, because I don't know how to work the computer. Excuse me. When I found her after 9 months in White Settlement Nursing Home, you can look it up for yourself. The state even rated them poor. I'm saying it's piss poor. She was poor shade. Marty, Marcia, are you listening?
I'm listening.
She was 4 shades of purple on her face.
Oh, my God.
To this day, I don't know what the hell happened. What happened to my dad? What happened to my mother?
Is your mother still alive today? Or
no.
She's not? I take it.
No.
Right? Okay.
The day I went and seen her, Donald Trump had won the election. Please know I had just gotten out of jail. I had went to the homeless shelter. I was evicted and put on the street by this corrupt ass shit. I had went to the homeless shelter to try to take a shower to go see my mother. Next thing you know, I'm coming down Lancaster, downtown Fort Worth, pulled over. I got 5 police officers with guns pulled on me.
Okay, can I interrupt you for a second? Can you, same thing that I was telling Tammy, can you send me an email and we can set up a time? Maybe you can come on air and tell your mom's story.
I would love to.
Okay, send me an email and we'll try to work something out and get you on air with your mom's story, okay?
All right.
Okay, all right, you've got my email?
I'm so sorry. Horrible.
I know, it's tragic what they do. Do you have my email, Mr. McKnight?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, do that,
please,
and we can... we can spend more time on.
Can I say one thing before
on...
I go?
Yes.
Please look at FortworthWeekly.com. What Jeff Prince is talking about, torn apart, why can't probate judges and lawyers obey the law? And well, Austin, Texas, continue allowing probate judges and lawyers to get rich off the Texas elderly. And I would really like to do a story with why Texas can't get no damn respect on this shit.
Well, they got the 10-day rule too in Texas. It's corrupt. So
it's corrupt as hell.
Yes, it is. Send me an email and send me that link. I was trying to write it down, but I didn't get it all written down. So send me that link too, so I can look that up.
Okay. Is this Marcia?
Okay. This is Marcia. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
Marcia.
You.
Love you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. McKnight. Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay. Okay, Terry.
Hi.
Are you there, Terry?
Yes, that's so tragic. So tragic.
Okay. It is tragic, and it sounds like we need a full story on that. I'm sure there was a lot more to that. So going back to Mrs. Leonard, so she's in,
mm-hmm.
and I do apologize. She's in the facility. They won't let her out, and Nancy is trying to see her, but her visits have been limited, and they
mm-hmm.
were supervised visits. Why
did
they
say
that? She
went for a long, long time without any visits at all.
Did they use?
I'm trying to think, was there any justification?
Because she had to drive a distance to get there because it wasn't
right.
Her whole purpose was to get her mom closer to her so that she could go visit her daily. And
right,
so now
right.
she's far enough away, and her brother couldn't even get there.
Right.
To
right.
visit his mom.
Right. And he had some medical issues. He was too far away. And then back in August of 2018. Nancy had been in a car accident and was not able to get there. That's what started. She was not able to go visit her mother simply because she was in a car accident herself and went through a good couple of months of rehab herself.
Mm-hmm.
And her health was having some issues right there from the car accident. And so when she did get out, they refused to allow her to see her mother. And, so her daughter, her mother was left kind of thinking that her daughter had abandoned her, and she had not. I remember going to see her. I went to see Ms. Leonard several times in the nursing home, and the first time I did, especially, it was so tragic. She was like, "So where is Nancy? Where is she? I want to go home." She kept on saying, "I want to go home. I want to go home. I want to get out of here." And actually, Nancy had told me that when they first put her in that nursing home, she told her daughter, "You've got to get me out of here, because if you don't, they're going to kill me, and then they're going to kill you." That was what she said. I mean, she knew what they were up to. She knew that they were trying to get rid of her. And may I add in there that she had quite a significant estate too, with some land, about 300 acres of prime timberland in South Alabama. So the woods, the lumber was very valuable. Her land was very valuable. So that there is ample suspicion that that is part of what was going on here.
Right.
So they isolated Ms. Leonard from her daughter, and then at some point they started allowing her to have an hour and a half visit twice a month or something like that. And she only had a couple of those before she passed away. And after we did an article, we had pictures of how much she had declined, pictures of bed sores that they that she had. Well, specifically one bed sore that it was there 2 months apart. That two different visits, it was still there. And I remember seeing a nurse that was in the room, and I missed when she had first come in there. But as she was leaving, she said, "No, she doesn't have any wounds on her." And so I went back and checked and found that, yes, this wound that I had seen 2 months before was still there. And I took pictures of it. It was still there, just as bad as it was 2 months before. And so, and she had, her eyes were crusting over. There was one eye that was crusted shut with just infection that they weren't cleaning. They weren't washing her face and all of this. And we were hearing from the roommate, actually. We didn't actually put this in the story because we kind of wanted to protect the roommate from any kind of retaliation, but the roommate was telling us about how they weren't feeding her and they weren't giving her something to drink and they weren't changing her and how they were mistreating her. And
well,
the roommate
even
to
the
was
point,
not...
It, go ahead. Her glasses, her eyeglasses and her hearing aids disappeared, so she couldn't even hear or see. And they made no attempt to get those back to her. And because I trust me, I read your articles. But in there, where does it say? It says something about they have to ensure, this is a Medicare, funds are required to ensure, facilities are required by Medicare to ensure that residents receive proper treatment and assistant devices to maintain vision and hearing abilities. And yet
I remember looking that up. Yeah, and so these clear laws were being violated. When they isolated her, they took her at one point, they moved her to a different room and wouldn't even let the roommate be in there. And they completely isolated her from everywhere, from everyone.
Right.
I know
even her students.
People did try to visit her. Yeah. Yes, students tried to visit. People were not being allowed to visit her. And that's a clear violation of the law. The law says you're not supposed to isolate. You're supposed, they are allowed to have whomever they want to visit them. Now, if she had said, "I don't want somebody visiting me," then the home would have been well within their rights to say, "You can't see her, she doesn't want you." But that wasn't the case. She was not allowed to have visitors, and they were keeping away people that she liked, people that she wanted to see, people that were coming to visit her and check on her. But and they isolated her. I mean, they hid her away, like they may as well have stuffed her in a drawer or in a closet and just forgotten about her.
Well,
now,
like she was a criminal.
It was a criminal. Well, you were talking about, the lady was talking about the civil rights with her son, and that's something that we need to make that point, is when this happens, when somebody is under a guardianship, they lose all of their civil rights, their right to just human connection, their right to their family. That's not something we see as a right, a constitutional right. It's a basic human liberty interest. It's a foundational, fundamental human right to have contact with your children. This woman was deprived of the ability to contact her own daughter.
Exactly. That's like putting, like I say, I go back to the criminal thing, solitary confinement. And when you put somebody, especially an elderly person, in, she couldn't get up and walk around. She couldn't see anything. She couldn't hear anything. They weren't feeding her. They isolated her even from her, the lady who had been in the bed next to her. So she's sitting in there. She can't hear. She can't see. She's not eating. They're not giving her food. And from when I was reading your article, that people would come and bring something to her, and supposedly the nurse would say she had eaten all of her lunch or her breakfast, and here she is.
And they hadn't even tried.
No.
Yeah.
And here she is scarfing down everything that anybody's bringing to her because she's starving.
Right.
Starving.
And
that's just
not even eat. that she wasn't able to eat things. She had to have puree food. Now, there was one of these ladies that was a friend of hers that brought in an Arby's sandwich, and she said one day, oh, that smells really good. She's like, well, do you want some? Let's make it. And she gave her a bite of it, and she was like, that's so good. She loved it. And she ate half of the sandwich. So it wasn't that she wasn't able to eat this stuff. They weren't giving it to her. She was able
right.
to eat. They took away the it was a doctor at St. Vincent's Hospital that took away her right to eat food, to literally eat food that she wanted, because the Nancy Scott, the daughter, had brought up to this doctor that, you know what, it's getting time for her dental appointment. You know, the 6 months, every 6 months you have a dental checkup and all of that. So they were conscientious, you know, they did their every 6 months teeth cleaning and all of that. It was just time for that. It wasn't anything wrong. So somehow that got turned in his report to she's not capable of eating solid food. Rather than let her go to the dentist for her routine cleaning every 6 months, he
right.
just deprived her of the joy of eating food. Now I'm not sure where you're based out of, but this is a Southern Alabama Southern women are known for cooking.
Georgia.
It's part of the culture. It's part. Are you from Georgia? Okay, so you know all
I'm from
about
Georgia.
It.
When, I do.
When
absolutely.
Something happens, we take a casserole to our neighbors, and you
mm-hmm.
have the church picnics, and you have it's food eating. Food is a community. It's what we do. We make sure
right.
that
and
that
sharing
the kids
recipes
are fed good
and just.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
right. So that, and especially,
it's what we do.
It's what we do. And especially the fact that she had been a school teacher and she had
right.
had her children, and, she, you know, she was used to having a lot of people around her. This was not
right.
someone who was isolated. She liked to travel. She liked the
mm-hmm.
kids. You know, she loved her family, and she was, all of it was taken away from her. So
right.
This continued, and I know that Nancy had talked to you. I know that y'all had a prayer vigil for her, trying to,
right.
you know, get people to, you know, standing out on the corner street. You picketed, more or less, trying to get people to see that this is what's going on. And at
mm-hmm.
one point, there was the representatives from Sumney's office. And
the guardian.
We were talking
yep.
about when
the
they took her
guardian.
In 2016 that she had no dementia or Alzheimer's. And what was their response?
This one young lady that works for the guardian said she was old. And we were like, so because she's old, you can take away all of her civil rights? And she's like, she's old. And that's why they put her on hospice, because she was old. Well,
right.
I looked up hospice because, you know, I thought that hospice was supposed to be for those who are terminally ill, and that's what Nancy had said. But I wanted to look it up for myself. And hospice is for people who are terminally ill. There's nothing in there that says hospice is for because you're old. There's not – hospice is not designed for that. That's not the purpose of it. She was old. It's like, so you have an expiration date on your civil liberties? On your right to life, she was old.
Because you're
that
old?
Was, I just was absolutely stunned that that was her response. She said it knowing she was talking to a journalist. She knew that. She knew that she was
mm-hmm.
talking to a journalist. And I quoted her because that's exactly what she was old. And,
but
and,
see, they're becoming so blatant about it because they're able to get away with murder, premeditated,
and it is condoned
murder. And here she's saying to you, she's 101 years old, there's a gentleman who may be listening from California, and his grandmother just turned 99, and, you know, she's wonderful.
Dang,
she's doing great. She enjoys
date.
Exactly. And it's the same thing that, you know, they wanted to put her in hospice, but hospice said she doesn't qualify. She's not sick.
Right.
She's just an elderly
right.
woman, but she's still full of her faculties. She's spunky, and God bless her. She's 99 years old. I think that's wonderful. There should not be a termination because you're old. I think it's what my
dad
just turned 92 on Monday. 2 days ago, my dad turned 92, and it's amazing. But, you know, the sad thing is, we, this generation now, with what is going on with the youth, stealth euthanasia, this generation will never live to be in our late 80s or our 90s. They will not permit it because we are going to become not viable. If, you know, if you're not working and you're not bringing in money, or, you know, you have a medical illness or you're costing more money, then they're going to get rid of you. If you go to the hospital a couple of times with broken bones, then you get marked. And that's why I say they come in. They came in with my mom when she went in. She was anemic, and they came in and said she qualifies for hospice because she has congestive heart failure. That's not a death sentence. That doesn't mean you're going to die anytime soon. It's treated with medicine. But what is happening is you have become a burden to society. You are costing more money than you are worth in their eyes, and they don't want to pay it. We have become a complete monetary society that's all we care about.
Well, you remember when during the previous administration and the elections with Sarah Palin, do you remember how with Obamacare they made fun of Sarah Palin relentlessly because she said there were going to be death panels? Well, we have death panels now. We have death panels. There was nothing exaggerated. She wasn't being ridiculous. She just was talking about what was actually coming because we have it. That's what's happening. That's exactly what you're describing. And these people make these decisions, these life and death decisions. And what was really alarming was we had someone who coincidentally, if you believe in coincidence, ended up just meeting and that we ran into, Ms. Nancy Scott and I ran into this person who's got a close friend that worked at the nursing home where Nancy's mother was being held captive. And they were discussing the morphine. They said they recognized that it was technically a HIPAA violation, but they were telling us anyway that that one of the nurses was a good friend, and that Ms. Scott was being given morphine, and it had gone beyond the stage of the pain relief kind of morphine. It was, quote, and this is, and I will never forget this, Tuma said, they're giving it in the levels to assist in the dying process.
Yeah. I mean, so they admitted
it. To assist in the dying process. Yes, yes, yes. To assist in the dying process.
Because she wasn't in pain.
With no terminal illness. No, she wasn't dying until they killed her. They were killing her with the morphine, and they kept on increasing the dosage until they killed her with those drugs. They murdered her. That in any other context, you would consider that murder. And I don't understand why there's not been any charges filed, and I don't understand why somebody's not going to prison for this, because this is murder. This was literally a murder.
That's right.
And someone needs to be held accountable for this. She should not have died.
Happening.
Now, maybe she would have lived another year. She might have lived 5 years. Who knows? But
you
she died miserable and alone. And it's very tragic. Nobody should have to die like that.
They shouldn't, and they take away your last chapter. They make the decision for you, and they cruelly murder you. And as Marty has said, just take a 45, or I think you said a 38, Marty, and just if you're going to do it, just do it quickly. But what they're doing is and that's why it's called stealth euthanasia. It's done right in front
that's
of your face.
Term.
And it's just happening right in front of you. You don't even know it, and they're lying to you and telling you the morphine will help them breathe. It'll help them breathe better. No, it won't. It will depress their breathing.
No,
when
they gave my grandfather morphine at the very end, he had pneumonia, and he did have some dementia and some Alzheimer's, but he wasn't in end stage, but he got pneumonia, and he was in the hospital. And they gave him morphine at the very end to help him. And, I mean, it was less than an hour, and he was gone. He was gone. And I had no idea about any of this. I just thought that this was I thought the pneumonia killed him.
Well,
but now
they count on that, and they give you this pamphlet, and that's why they give you a pamphlet, and they tell you to read this. And when you start reading it, you see the same signs. And in my mom's case, the same signs, her fingernails were starting to turn blue, and they say, it's a dying process. She's dying. Well, yes, she's dying. You're giving her morphine, Ativan, and fentanyl. Of course she's dying. But she's not dying from congestive heart failure. She's dying because you're drugging her, and she now cannot eat or drink because the Ativan is keeping her from being able to think. She can't speak. She can't swallow now.
Right.
And you're drugging her. It's murder. And why we have so many people that do not believe it, do not accept it, and then, of course, we have on our betrayed, our Murdered by Hospice Facebook group, we have nurses that come on and want to come in and be a part of it because they want to educate us because they say everything we're saying is wrong. Well, we've been educated by you, by reality, and seeing the murder of our loved ones, and we have no intention of letting you come onto our site and disparage us and tell people that we're wrong in what we know happened. And if you look at medical records and you call through the medical records line by line and you look at the medicine that they were given, the amount of time, and the fact that the patient says no pain, when they say, are you in pain, the patient says no. Or the nurse will indicate there were no pain, there were no signs, no symptoms of pain, no grimacing, no moaning. And then you see an entry, morphine, Ativan, right together, always right together. And that's why
and
I say.
It's because I've noticed those same drugs when Marty was reading those earlier. I thought, those are the same drugs that we see in every case. Every case that I've ever seen, those are the drugs.
That's right. And it's for a reason. And it's not a one size fits all. And those drugs, in the right use, they're good. I mean, Ativan, in its right circumstances, it's not a bad drug. And morphine, if someone is really dying and they're in horrible pain from cancer, and it's horrible, then yes, I don't believe in making somebody suffer. But they should know that when I start giving you this morphine, you're not going to be able to talk to your loved ones. You're not going to be able to say things. You're going to go into a sleep, and then you're just not going to wake up. Then I say, yes, I understand, and that's what I want. That's consensual. What is happening is not consensual to the person, the patient, nor to their loved ones. It is murder. And
informed consent, and you hit on something. Informed consent is just not happening. Before I got into reporting, I was a labor doula and an assistant midwife and childbirth educator. So I was dealing with pregnant moms and birthing moms. And informed consent was all about what we would do. We would talk to women about what the different options are and whether the different medications or the different things going on. We feel like that's part of what we did was teach the pros and cons of each option, and then the decision is left up to mom. So, you see that denied. Informed consent a lot of times doesn't happen in childbirth. They're not being given the whole truth of it enough to make an informed decision. But even more so, as you're talking about with our senior citizens, there's no informed consent at all. And if we recall the Nuremberg trials and the Nuremberg Code, that's where we got informed consent out of, because so people were being experimented on without informed consent. And this is nothing but experimentation. If you look at that, I mean, that there's a big case that could be made for that. In fact, with the children, we've learned that children who are wards of the state, and I would think that this actually does apply to the senior citizens. If they're wards of the state, they can legally be used for medical research, drug testing, as medical lab rats without their parents' knowledge or consent. And I think that applies with the senior citizens that are wards of the state. They can be legally used for these for medical drug testing or medical experimentation without their knowledge or consent. And how they bypass the Nuremberg Code is the social workers or the judges or guardians give consent in lieu of the patient or the parent.
And then the guardian is not someone, as in the case of the young lady who called in, Tammy, the guardian is not someone who loves that child or with Mr. McKnight who loves the mother.
Right.
I mean, they don't love them. They don't care about them. They have no compassion, no consideration. They are not treated like human beings. And how do we look at Nazism and decide that that was so horrible, and yet we're doing the same thing here?
Right.
We're just not
right.
gassing them at, yet.
But it,
you know,
it's
at this
very
point,
equivalent. I mean, there's a case to be made that this is very, very similar. In fact,
sure,
that's honestly one of the things that we've been doing in Washington, D.C., is talking to legislators about the Child Protective Services and the federal funding. But there was actually a bill introduced in 2014 by Representative Michelle Bachmann and Representative Karen Bass and others. So it's bipartisan, both parties. And it said basically you can't use federal funding to use foster children for medical experimentation. And so that bill went nowhere in 2014. It just was crooked. It went nowhere. And so we've been bringing this to legislators and saying, look, it's time. This really needs to be law. And we had people on both sides of the aisle saying, wow, I can't believe this isn't law. Okay, yeah, this needs to get in there. So I'm really hoping and praying that if nothing else comes out of these trips to Washington, D.C., that part, that bill gets passed that says that they can't use wards of the state for medical experimentation. They can't use federal funding for that.
That is unconscionable that anybody would even think that that is acceptable behavior. I mean, you can't you cannot do that to prisoners of war or prisoners
right.
that are in, you know, they have more rights than
they do.
A ward of the state
has. They have
a
lot more rights than families.
Good grief.
Mm-hmm.
I was not aware of that. I'm shocked that you would experiment on people.
Yeah, I learned that
people.
Early on. Yeah, that's the medical kidnapping, medicalkidnap.com. That was one of the things that we started learning right away. The Justina Pelletier case in Boston, where a teenager was taken from her family for medical kinds of reasons, or like a medical kind of a medical disagreement between one hospital and her family doctor. And it came to light that there was a doctor at Boston Children's Hospital that was doing medical research on he said that she had, that she didn't, somatoform disorder. And he was doing medical research on that, and he needed her in his study. And I've seen that happen time and time again, where a child with that's medically complex or a child with a rare medical condition will go into a hospital, and that just so happens that they're doing medical research on that, and then they find reasons, allegations, to take that child away from their parents, even if it's allegations that can easily be proven false, which has happened plenty of times. They can make up these allegations and then take these children from their families, and then they can legally put them in medical research and use them as a lab rat. And it's happening all over this country, and I've covered many, many cases of this.
Good, great. So that's like the, organ harvesting and things like
mm-hmm.
that you sit back and you look and you shake your head to say, that's not happening, but it is.
It is happening. It is.
It
yes,
is happening.
It is.
And they would do that, and to begin with, and I think in a lot of the cases of the children who have some serious issues, I think a lot of that is caused from medicines and vaccines and stuff that is being injected into the children, or, you know, what the food that we're eating. I don't mean to get off on another topic, but the food that we're eating is causing a lot of these issues. And so the children are born and they have like anger issues or, I know back during some of our wars with, you know, maybe Agent Orange and Desert Storm, that some of our soldiers came back and they had some issues that has actually been passed on to children now. And so now
mm-hmm.
these children already have issues for various reasons, and then you're going to use them as a lab rat?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, I don't even believe in using animals as lab rats personally, but, you know, I prefer to have safe mascara rather than one that's been tested on bunny rabbits. But
Right. And our conscience tells us that that's wrong to do, but yet it's being done to foster children.
And we know it is. This isn't alarmist. I'm not being extreme. I'm not making up some. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is fact. There's plenty of stories in mainstream media where we had in New York, they had all these children being testing the AIDS drugs on. We go back to Tuskegee with the airmen. Unethical medical research. It's happened. Nariah, a little girl that had a very rare medical condition that was admitted to Emory Hospital because the doctor looked at her. They had just moved to the area, and the doctor came in and looked at the chart and didn't even look at the child and says, "Ooh, I have someone next door who would love to see you." And they made up false allegations, got her taken away from her parents, and in the matter of about 2 years, they killed her. They did all these experimental surgeries, and they killed little sweet Nariah.
And she was kept in the hospital?
Utterly, yes. She never went home.
From her parents, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Her mother was a saint, and she was such a precious woman who fought with everything she had to get her back. She had a very rare medical condition, trisomy 9. But apparently she was worth more to some people for her parts than she was just as a person. Yes, she was
developmentally delayed.
She was a little girl.
Right.
She was
and
13.
If she,
I went to see her. Precious, precious little girl.
And if she is going to die, you know, she's not going to be able to live to adulthood, then let her die peacefully and grow up with her family for as long as she has.
Right. Right. Well, even with the condition that when I saw her, the condition that she was in, I thought, you know what? She's not going to live to be a ripe old age. She's not going to be an 80-year-old woman. But I don't see any reason why she shouldn't live to be 25. And I even talked to her. I'm like, when you have your 25th birthday, let's have a party, and I'll come. And mm-hmm. and I meant it. There's no reason that she shouldn't have lived even at that point to 25. And she didn't. She didn't survive. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. Then we've also seen where they've done these kinds of cases where they've kept people in the hospital and they're doing it or taking them into foster care as a cover-up for medical malpractice. They accuse the parents of something called Munchausen syndrome by proxy, and,
mm-hmm.
and they accuse the parents of trying to do this for attention when what is really happening is they're covering up medical malpractice.
And
I'll say this time and time
again. And it wasn't the parent anyway.
No, wasn't the parent. Nope.
So, yeah.
So,
we're limited on our time. But I wanted to say that Nancy, you know, because a lot of people might be thinking, well, you know, why didn't they do something? And, you know, why was she in there? But I think you can say that Nancy exhausted every effort that she could trying to get her mom to get out of that prison.
Yes.
You know,
she talked to everybody that she could. She went to all kinds of attorneys. She prayed. She demonstrated. She talked about the story. She called legislators. She did everything that she could. There is no way that anyone could say that Nancy Scott didn't do everything humanly possible to get her mother
mm-hmm.
back home.
Exactly. And it's so sad. And she died August the 26th, is that right? Of this year.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was August the 26th of this year at 103. And
mm-hmm.
like as you say, who knows how much longer she would have lived.
Right.
And
right.
when she asked, they don't care. But when she went to the ombudsman, she was told he couldn't do anything about it or she couldn't do anything about it because it was up with the judge. And everybody just points fingers. Well, I can't do anything about it because it's this county and it's this. And so nobody did anything, and this poor lady died by herself, not knowing why her daughter wasn't there and being totally isolated. It's cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
It's inhumane.
It is.
It's cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I just, you know. We could have gone for 2 hours, Terry.
this is a subject I can talk about a lot. So, I mean, and I'm going to keep talking until it's resolved, until this stops happening.
Well, I'm proud of you for going to D.C. and fighting this and trying to get the legislation changed. And that's what it's going to take, is everybody standing up and, you know, saying this is wrong, and we're not going to tolerate it.
Right.
So
right.
I appreciate all that you're doing to try to stop it. It takes all of us doing
all of us,
all
yes,
different
all
parts.
Of us.
We need all different people.
Yes.
So
absolutely. Never give up, people. Never give up. Never give up.
Never
give
up.
Because this is a very winnable fight. We have to. This is so unjust. We are on the side of right. And I have to believe that we are still in a universe where good triumphs ultimately over evil.
So I absolutely agree. Thank you to our listeners tonight, and we'll see you back on the 4th of December with another very, very good guest. And we appreciate having you on tonight, Terry. And you have been excellent.
Thank you,
thank you so much. Thank you very much. And I'll be talking
thank
to you
so
later.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay,
bye-bye.
Feel better. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.